We're going to talk mushrooms now. I'm a mushroom fan, but the only place I go to hunt for them is the grocery store. Our next guest digs a little deeper to find out where the wild mushrooms we eat come from and who's getting them for us.
Joining us now is Langdon Cook. He's a writer, speaker, and forager, and his new book is called The Mushroom Hunters, On the Trail of an Underground America. And he joins us from the studios of KUOW in Seattle. Langdon, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, you're a self-proclaimed mushroom enthusiast. When did this obsession with foraging mushrooms begin?
I've been picking mushrooms for probably about 20 years, since moving to Seattle, which is a famously damp place and a great place for fungi. So, you know, I pick for myself and my friends, and I love to cook with mushrooms. But I also realized after picking for a number of years that there were others out there who were doing this on a professional basis.
Now, mushrooms are a hot commodity right now, and it's actually never occurred to me to wonder. I sort of thought there might be mushroom farms, which I now realize doesn't make a ton of sense with these wild mushrooms that you're talking about. Can you actually make a living off picking mushrooms?
Well, there's some people that are trying. I mean, several thousand, as a matter of fact. And you can move with the seasons in the greater Pacific Northwest 12 months out of the year picking wild mushrooms. So there is the possibility of doing that. And, of course, you have to be a great optimist. You have to be thinking that over the next ridge is the mother lode and that you'll strike it rich. And a lot of them are. And, you know, they pick mushrooms day after day and move with the seasons and camp in national forests. And do what's known as the circuit or the mushroom trail, picking different species at different times. And so I got on the mushroom trail with them.
Now, these are wild mushrooms we're talking about. Can you run us through the list of what's out there?
Sure. And you had mentioned farm mushrooms. And of course, there are farm mushrooms. When you go to the grocery store and you see those little cute white button mushrooms, those are domesticated mushrooms that are grown in farm-like conditions. But the wild mushrooms are really special. They come in all sorts of different colors and shapes and sizes. And of course, they have different taste profiles. And so some of the better known wild mushrooms that you might forage would be chanterelles or porcini mushrooms, also known as king boletes. There's a one that looks like something that might wash up at high tide called a cauliflower mushroom with a wonderful nutty flavor. There's hedgehog mushrooms and yellow feet and lobster mushrooms. I mean, there's all kinds of different wild mushrooms, and they really are a fascinating, almost otherworldly looking sort of pantheon.
Now, in Wisconsin, we get probably the most excited about morels and also lion's mane I've had around here, which are really kind of fun looking. And you're out there in Seattle. Is Seattle sort of the place, the mothership for mushrooms?
Well, we're certainly right in the heart of it all. You know, from Northern California all the way up through Oregon and Washington and BC into Southeast Alaska and then east to the Yukon and down through Idaho and Western Montana, that's really the sort of, you know, that's the area where most of the serious professional pickers are working. But Seattle is certainly right near the top. And of course, a lot of mushrooms get exported from Seattle and Portland.
Now, you talked about the mushroom trail. Tell us what that is.
Well, so as I mentioned, it's the mushroom trail is a physical trail. It's the itinerant sort of path that the pickers follow as they follow the flushes of mushrooms through the seasons. But it's also in the book kind of a metaphor. Being on the mushroom trail is really finding a, sort of a different way to make a living. Living out in the woods, being in tune with the seasons, wandering around, looking for a type of food that, you know, we have no part in tending. Nature is taking care of these mushrooms, and really our job is to go out and find them. And there's the rub. But I mean, the mushroom trail, as it's understood by most folks, is, as I had mentioned, the sort of road for mushroom pickers that extends from Northern California up through Washington and BC into Alaska. And those are the really prime picking areas. And of course, it's famously wet. And also, we have these wonderful volcanic soils out here, which seem to help with the fruiting of the wild mushrooms.
Now, you went along on this mushroom trail with a couple of guys who were really, they were the, I guess, pros at finding these mushrooms. Tell us who you went with.
So I met a picker named Doug. And he graciously sort of let me into his world. And, you know, wild mushroom pickers are famously secretive. And you hear all sorts of stories about secret patches and people claiming patches out in the woods and guarding them ferociously and all that sort of thing. But, you know, Doug was very generous with his information. And then he would sell his mushrooms to a particular buyer named Jeremy. And so between the two of those characters, I got kind of both sides of the coin, the picker and the buyer. And I spent a lot of time out in the field with both of them.
Well, tell us about one of the trips that you took with Doug.
Well, Doug and I have been all over the Northwest together, but we also we went down as far as Northern California a few times on what is known as winter pick. And, you know, while most people are, kind of bundled up for the winter and shoveling snow and all that kind of thing, in Northern California, very temperate, you get these mushrooms fruiting, which land on restaurant, plates through the winter, black trumpets, hedgehogs, yellowfeet mushrooms. And so Northern California and southwestern Oregon are the places to pick those. So we headed down probably sometime in January, and we camped in some forest areas. And we actually ran into a few tough customers, which I write about in the book. There was an incident at one point.
I want to hear about that. What happened?
As I had mentioned, you hear these stories of running gun battles in the woods and, you know, pickers who are packing heat and all that kind of stuff. And I really haven't encountered that. But in the middle of the night, while we were trying to sleep, we weren't picking mushrooms. And I don't think these guys happen to be mushroom pickers, but they came into our camping area with some big guns. And there was a lot of there were a lot of rounds going off.
Really?
And we had to make a hasty getaway.
Did they want your mushrooms?
You know, I think they were jacked up on something, and they might not have even known we were trying to sleep where we were. We were sort of hiding, our campsite, but we could hear them. They were nearby, and the bullets were flying, and we needed to get out of there and get out of there quick.
So this is not necessarily a safe occupation all the time anyway.
Well, I don't want to make it sound too dangerous. I mean, that was really one of the scarier things that happened. But, you know, when you're out there in the woods, in the unpoliced corners of the forests, you never know. You might run into a bear. You might run into an unsavory competitor. You just never know. And so those are some of the things that you have to deal with. But mostly, you know, it was just being outside in beautiful places, wandering through the woods, finding these edible treasures, and just being so excited with each find. I mean, it really is just like being a kid again on a treasure hunt in the woods. And that's one of the really appealing things about hunting mushrooms. And I think that's probably one of the motivating factors for the folks who do it for a living. It's just, you know, as one guy said to me, it sure beats a cubicle. And, you know, I mean, his livelihood fluctuates, you know, day to day, week to week. You never know when the mushroom flush is going to be off or on and what the prices are going to be, because they go up and down with the market. And it's a tough way to make a living. It's hard work. You're walking miles every day carrying a heavy bucket or a pack and, dealing with the weather and all kinds of other things. But for people who want to work outside and be their own boss, you know, it's not bad.
Well, we're going to hear more about that adventure in just a moment. Hear more about the demand for mushrooms, too, and how much you might actually make as a mushroom hunter. As we talk with Langdon Cook about how mushrooms get from the forest to your plate, his new book is called The Mushroom Hunters: On the Trail of an Underground America.
How about you? Are you a mushroom forager? We'd like to hear from you if you go out hunting morels, at least, or maybe you've been around the country to hunt for different kinds of yummy wild mushrooms. Call in at 800-642-1234. Or maybe you just like eating the things. What's your favorite kind? And your favorite recipe? Call 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll get to your calls right after the news. I'm Rob Ferret.
I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later in the program, we'll talk about what's at stake for food assistance programs in a bill in the U.S. House today.
Right now, we're continuing our conversation with Langdon Cook about the underground world of mushroom hunting, and we're taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And before we get to these calls, we've got a lot of them. I want to ask you, you know, how much did Doug make at this mushroom hunt when you were out with him? Is it a decent living?
You know, it's a tough way to make a living. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, there are some pickers who do a little better than others, but you really have to be on it all the time, ready to move when the weather shifts, keeping your sort of ear to the ground as far as where the mushrooms are fruiting. You have to be willing to pull stakes and head somewhere else. It is a tough way to make a living. I talked to a picker who said that he picked an incredible morel flush one year. And we have this phenomenon. I know you love your morels in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
We have this phenomenon in the West where after the mountain wildfires, there can be really huge morel flushes the following spring. Mm. And so the pickers follow, they're fire watchers. They keep tabs on where all the forest fires are, and then they start scouting them in the early spring and, hope for that big morel flush. And I talked to this one picker named Bill who said, you know, he was making about $1,000 a day picking a really great morel flush in Idaho.
Wow.
And he was doing that for days, for weeks, really. And that funded pretty much his entire year. I think he went down to Costa Rica after that.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. Okay. If you get lucky, you can hit it pretty big. If you get lucky.
That's right. And you got to be at the right place at the right time. And you have to be able to sort of unravel the puzzle of mushrooms. That's the thing. They're conundrums. They're tricky. You got to understand all sorts of factors that go into their fruiting, from, tree canopy to soil type to weather conditions. All these things work in concert to produce flushes of mushrooms, and you have to understand all the moving parts.
Let's get to the phones now. We have Kathy joining us on Madeline Island. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Excuse me. One of my favorite subjects on the planet, mushrooms. I've been picking them for about 40 years, and never trying to make a living out of it. Have sold them on occasion when I caught a huge bloom of maybe chanterelles. The morel or the boletes this year were fabulous. But the question I have is, I encounter an awful lot of mushroom phobia from folks. They're just petrified that I'm going to have picked a poisonous mushroom, and I have to listen to that story of the mycologist, I think he was in Minnesota, who killed himself with a mushroom he picked. I can't tell you how many times I've had to hear that story. So my question is, when do these pickers cross the line where they are completely accepted for the product they're delivering?
Okay, thanks, Kathy. Thank you for sharing your experience. Sounds so interesting. What do you think, Langdon?
Well, I think what she's asking is what sort of regulations are there to sort of ensure that everybody is and safe and happy with their product. I mean, it's true that this is sort of a new industry. I mean, it really didn't exist much more than 30 years ago. So it's new. The regulators are playing catch-up ball. It is a sort of a freewheeling form of capitalism out there in the woods. I refer to it as one of the last vestiges of the Wild West. And so, you might be surprised to hear that there hasn't been a documented case of somebody buying wild mushrooms from, say, a farmer's market or store that were actually not what they were supposed to be and were poisonous and killed them or made them very sick. It just hasn't happened. Most of the really choice edibles are pretty easy to identify. So chanterelles, porcini, black trumpets, hedgehogs, etc. They're relatively easy to identify. And so far, everyone's done a pretty good job, you know, to ensure safety. But I can see, you know, where the caller is going with that. And it does seem at times like there isn't that much apparatus. I mean, you can just kind of browse mushrooms at the farmer's market and look through the baskets and you wonder, you know, who picked these? Where did they come from? How do I know that they're safe? And I guess you're sort of, you know, you're trusting the vendor to a large degree in that case.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your call, Kathy. And let's move on to Jonathan in Madison. Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
All right, how are you?
Doing great. I just wanted to call and say I've actually gotten into morel hunting the past few years. My friends got me into it, and it's I couldn't have said it better myself when you mentioned it, bringing you back into being like a kid again. I just have so much fun, and it's in regards to what your previous caller mentioned, sometimes there is a misconception. There are morels that that they look like morels, but they're actually more shaped like a bell mushroom, and those I heard are somewhat poisonous. But I've come across a couple of them this last year. I guess the Madison area was rather scarce. I know the farmers market they were charging upwards of $40-$45 a pound for morels this year.
They were expensive this year. I bought some myself since I managed to miss the season last year. But I'm curious, Jonathan, as a fellow morel fan, what's your favorite way to cook them?
Oh, my favorite way is a lot of people like to like fry them and like lightly bread them and stuff like that. I've tried that, but I you can't get much better than just keeping it simple. If I just put a little bit of butter in the pan, if you prefer, sometimes I'll put some onions in there as well, but don't really eat the onions. Just put them in there for the taste factor. But me, I just straight simple butter and morels, and it depends on how. Sometimes some people like them a little more crispy, but just keep them on a low heat. And let them get to the point where you prefer them, and then eat away.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing that experience. Langdon, do you have a favorite mushroom?
Well, I was just going to agree there. I think keeping it simple is good because mushrooms have so much to offer. They have so much flavor. And the wild mushrooms, I mean, you start trying these different varieties, and you might think, these aren't really even mushrooms at all. They don't taste what my concept of a sort of a supermarket button is. I mean, they have so many different flavors. They're incredibly meaty. But my favorite, boy, you know, we're having a pretty good pop right now of King Bleats in the Cascade Mountains. And I went out picking yesterday and picked a bucket. And we cooked some of those up as soon as I got home. And, you know, just thinly sliced, sautéed in butter, little sprinkling of salt, maybe just a little herb from the garden thrown on top there. And you know what I like to do is I take a baguette and I slice it thinly and put a little ricotta cheese on each slice and then top that with the porcini that's been sautéed in the butter and then just the sprinkling of salt. And that's it. I mean, the mushroom is what's taking care of that. Porcini, by the way, has just a really wonderful kind of toasty, nutty flavor. And then when you dry it in a dehydrator, it becomes like a totally different mushroom. At that point, it is earthy. And, you know, when you inhale the aroma of it, it just seems like you're inhaling the aroma of the woods. And I use that. I grind up the dried porcini and I add it to soups and stews and sauces. And it really gives a kind of a big base note to those sort of foods.
Oh, you described that beautifully, and you made everyone in the studio so hungry. Sounds divine. You ship us some? No, I guess you can't.
Well, dried, certainly.
Wow, that sounds pretty great. You know, I can't think of a better place to leave it than that. Everyone's mouth is watering. Langdon, thank you so much for being here with us today.
And thank you.
That was Langdon Cook, the author of The Mushroom Hunters on the Trail of an Underground America.